Welcome to the School Sucks Project,
a podcast, YouTube channel, and an online community
dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives,
home education,
critical thinking,
peaceful parenting,
organization and productivity,
and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get
infographics,
comprehensive show notes,
relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at @SchoolSucksShow.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username @SchoolSucksPodcast.
And get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
As the saying goes, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago and right now. To both of you, do you still feel some responsibility of outreach, not just to other people that you care about, or responsibility to yourself, or responsibility to this philosophy as a kind of defensive measure?
Be a person that they like being around. Be a person that they like talking to. Be a person that will receive what they're saying. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them, and it doesn't mean you have to cave into their demands or really even make yourself vulnerable to damage that they can do. But when you focus on connecting with other people and you focus on the person, a lot of those divisive, those divisions, those barriers, those walls come down and you find ways to coexist. You know, my ultra leftist triple masking neighbor, boy, she really likes me and she's a nice lady and we get along fantastically because, again, I focus on that connection. That's kind of my thing. Let people like you.
Really, I think what has been most influential for me over the past year and a half is realizing how much of my reality was wholly constructed. Again, like I bring to mind, an inspiring through action. Like when the first realm inevitably fails people, in the pharmaceutical realm, like the second realm can step up and be that alternative. That's really the best method of outreach.
Hello, friends. This is Brett. Today is Monday, August 2nd, 2021. And being Monday, it's a big week ahead here on Earth. This episode does not contain any of the news you need. In fact, it was recorded almost 2 weeks ago. But considering the last couple weeks of content, and a lot of this has been rehashed or further explored in our university meetings, I thought it would be nice and helpful this first week in August to change directions a little bit and do something more solutions-focused and positive. So I'm very happy to be welcoming Shane Radliff back to the show. Shane, of course, from the Vanu podcast, Liberty Under Attack Publications, and a newer project that we're going to be talking about today. That website is paznia.com, paznia.com, and we will be explaining that in some detail, not full detail, but some detail. We're also going to be joined by my friend Joe Motard, who is one of the organizers of the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. I will arrive in that area on August 11th by plane, supposedly, and then depart on the morning of the 16th by plane, supposedly, to go to New Hampshire to see my family, supposedly. But it was very, very important for various reasons to make it to Midwest Peace and Liberty this year. I'm going to be giving a talk there called School Sucks Graduation, as well as numerous other recordings, appearances, socializings, etc. So I'm really looking forward to the fest. You'll hear us say in the conversation that it's like 3 weeks away. That's not the case anymore. Like I said, this recording was from the week before last. The registration deadline is August 5th. That is just a few days away at this point, and the website is mplfest.org. We are going to be basing today's conversation largely on a piece that Shane wrote on his website, vonupodcast.com. That's V-O-N-U podcast.com. We'll be explaining that too, for those of you who don't know what that means. The title of Shane's piece, August 12th, 2020, Liberated Areas Among the Tyrannical Wasteland. There's a lot of terminology introduced in that article that I liked, and I will link it in the show notes. There's also an audio version that's about 9 minutes long if you want to listen to the whole thing. But this first and second realm that you heard previewed at the very beginning of the show, in short, and Shane will explain this more fully, the first realm is basically where everybody lives, where the TV is on, telling you what to be afraid of, where you ask, you know, authorities for permission to use your own property. You pay sales tax, you take your shoes off before you can go on an airplane ride because Richard Reed, who's Richard Reed? I don't even remember anymore. Even many of us with our philosophy have for a long time tolerated this first realm. And of course, there's varying levels of tolerance, as you might have observed. Shane, in this piece written almost a year ago, imagines that things might reach a point where many of us who've tolerated this first realm will no longer be able to do so and seek something else. And that would take us on to the second realm, consisting of what Shane calls PAZs, P-A-Z, permanent autonomous zones or intentional communities, and TAZs, temporary autonomous zones, which would be things like events or gatherings, like the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest that I'll be attending next week. Hope to see you there. And I will just conclude by saying, remember, the next Mindset and Mastery Virtual Summit is September 11th and 12th. Mindsetandmastery.com to learn all about what's going to happen there. If you attend, I assure you, you will leave saying, that all seemed like it was very well planned ahead of time. All right, enjoy the show. I will be back later this week for a reunion with CJ Kilmer, Professor CJ from the Dangerous History Podcast. Thanks for listening and take care. Blacksmith and the artist reflected in their art. It forged the creativity closer to the heart. Yes, closer to the heart. All right, I am very pleased to welcome two guests today. The first, a longtime School Sucks listener, friend, and the organizer of the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, Joe Motard. Hi, Joe.
How's it going, Brett?
Great. I'm glad to have you here. I think this is your, wait, is this your first appearance on School Sucks?
So I have been a multi-time sort of small background character. There's been a couple of snippets. Certainly there's been mentions, but this is my first time on an official interview. I'm a real boy.
Oh, gosh. How could I forget the time you were kind of in the background, but your voice was heard and the episode was recorded in your car? That very awkward Scott Horton interview I did as you tried to race him to the airport. What was that, 2019 Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest?
It was 19 or 18. I don't remember.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, it could have been 2018. And my other guest returning is Shane Radliff from the Vanu podcast. And his other website is Paznia, PAZNIA.com. We're going to be talking about that in depth today. Hi, Shane.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for the invitation to come back on and chat. It's good to be here. And it ties in with our last conversation.
Oh, excellent.
I didn't know it. I didn't know it at the time, but that was, I'm pretty sure I had all my belongings loaded up in my Mercury Grand Marquis, and I was moving to Austin, Texas. So that was kind of the start to this adventure that I didn't really know about. So, you know, I can certainly talk about that too.
Now, you're not still there, are you, in Austin?
No. So I was in Austin for about a month and a half. A couple months. And then I had another quick change in living situation. And I actually went and moved down to Acapulco, Mexico for a month and a half with my buddy Jason Hinsa. That was a few months before I moved here to the homestead where I am now. Definitely not in Austin.
Yeah, because everybody else went there. So that's not the right place for you. Yeah, last I knew you had, or last we talked, you had gone to Acapulco and I didn't know where you wound up settling. So that's cool. And you've put together a bit of a homestead. So you're somewhat not mobile right now.
Correct. Yeah, I'm not mobile, just on 22 acres here. And what I've deemed the Free Republic of Paznia. It's, I guess, an hour and a half northeast of St. Louis to give people a more particular geographical area.
All right, cool. And we're going to, like I said, we're going to talk about that in depth today. The first thing I want to do, since we're all going to be coming together in, what is that, like 3 weeks?
About 3 weeks, yeah.
Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. Mm-hmm. Joe, could you give us a rundown on what this event is all about? It has become one of my favorite places to visit all the years I've been able to make it there since my first in 2018.
Well, gosh, it's actually one of my favorites, too. This year is the 9th annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, which we hold in Michigan. Our current facility is in Gaines on a 76-acre farm plot that owned by a friend of ours. So she herself is a voluntarist. We founded it as just a kind of a camping trip between friends. We had a community of anarchist voluntarists, you know, small libertarians, people who believe in freedom, who just kind of wanted to hang out together. We were having monthly meetups and we're like, hey, why don't we go camping together? That would be fun. And that was 2012. And boy, we really enjoyed it. It drew a lot of people. So we gave it a name. Next year it was bigger. Next year after that, a little bit bigger. We ended up at first we were actually at a state recreation area. We then moved out to a place called Circle Pines, way out in kind of the western part of southern Michigan. That was where you were the those first two times. Now where we are under friendly ownership, number one, it's much closer to a couple of airports, so it's a lot easier to get travelers in. But also because it is our friend that owns it, it's an even more free atmosphere. But basically, this is a camping long weekend. We run Thursday through Monday. This year, it's August 12th through the 16th. Gaines, Michigan is just outside of Flint, and it is it's rustic camping. We have a few RV hookup sites that we've put in on the grounds, but I believe those are already filled. However, we do have amenities. We have showers. We have bathrooms, obviously. And we do have a roster of activities and presenters and speakers. And so we always strive to keep it a very chill vibe, not real regimented, not jam-packed schedules.
What are you most looking forward to about this year's event?
I am actually leading an offsite hike this year, Friday the 13th. Over the past couple of years, I've become an extremely avid hiker and I love it. And I find the forest to be just a wonderful healing place. So we figured we'd go off into the woods and wander and explore, exercise and just breathe it in. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And obviously I'm pretty darn excited about the School Sucks graduation happening on Saturday evening.
Yes.
I think that's going to be a special one.
And Shane, you're going to be there. What are you looking forward to this time?
It's hard to pinpoint one thing. I know for me, it's the one thing I've made sure to do every year for the past 6 years. I guess I'm most looking forward to reconnecting with some Michigan folks. I don't get to see that often, including Joe here. So I guess that'd probably be the most important thing is just getting together with like-minded people. I think it's
awesome.
Important.
Yeah. And that's where we met in 2018 and mm-hmm. did our first interviews together. So the format for today's show is Joe and I, so I'll periodically throw to Joe for follow-up questions, maybe things I didn't think of, are going to interview Shane about his rapidly increasing relevance as far as like practice and philosophy are concerned. I said before we started recording, Shane has been ahead of the curve on a lot of the developments that we've seen in the world over the course of 2020 and certainly continuing to escalate in 2021. So the first question that I want to ask you, Shane, even though you and I have covered this on my podcast before, but just for anybody who is new and hasn't heard those conversations, can you talk about what VANU is and the philosophy behind that?
Sure. So VANU is a freedom strategy and philosophy developed by a guy pseudonymously named Rayo back in the 1960s. And it's an awkward contraction of the words voluntary, not vulnerable. And just, I guess, briefly defined, it's pursuing the pursuance of lifestyle changes in pursuance of freedom. So some of these would be van nomadism, perpetual traveling, agorism would fit in there, financial independence, homeschooling, getting children out of the course of schooling institutions, certainly an important one. And then things like intentional communities and ethical enclaves, things like that. Basically, I guess that's the real brief definition. before voluntarism really came about, you know, the peaceful philosophy of voluntarism and non-aggression principle, he was already talking about all of these ideas. I guess his perception back in the 1960s, I mean, things obviously hadn't escalated this much, right. But he was, I guess he viewed the world just kind of like how we all three probably see it today, back in the 1960s. So he made all these radical lifestyle changes, but back at that time. But foundational to Vanu is it's not only philosophy. You know, philosophy is great and it's critically important, but there's a necessary duality of philosophy and practice. Those, you know, one without the other isn't great. You know, they're both very, very critically important because they both influence each other. So he was very, very heavily focused on action and obviously worked in some philosophy there. But that's been my focus. What I've been trying to push out there is, you know, the philosophy of voluntarism and, you know, peace is fantastic. You know, it's critical. It's a critical foundation. But we have to start building something, you know, going towards something. And that's been my focus is a solution to trying to figure out how to go about my own personal self-liberation. And then also to this large network of people that's, you know, we've got a large network of voluntarists and you know, Vanuans on the internet. Like, let's start building something in physical space and time. So, yeah, that's a little bit on Vanu and I guess kind of bringing it to relevancy today.
Sure. And one of the things that I admired right from the beginning of encountering your work was a series that you did called Direct Action, where you spent a lot of time like, okay, we've outlined the philosophy of this. Here are like practical steps that you can take. That was part of your Liberty Under Attack podcast, which now mm-hmm. is just your publications platform. But I'm sure a lot of that is built into Vanu as well. And you're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's all, it's all the same thing, right? Personal freedom, self-liberation. Anything you can do to increase your personal freedom without asking for permission. That's the whole underlying thing. We aren't, so, you know, that's why politics is out of the equation. Vanu is completely apolitical. Direct action as I presented it a few years ago, is apolitical too. So it's all about, things we can do in the here and now, to increase our personal freedom without, you know, begging those who falsely imagine themselves to be our rulers or asking for permission.
Right. Yeah. To kind of strip politics out of it, I was talking about this in a recent show with my friend Scott Hambrick, and I brought up Ernie Hancock's dichotomy of there's people who just won't leave me alone and there's people who just want to be left alone. And that doesn't necessarily fall into a political box, right? Those who just want to be left alone. And for those of us who've traveled around the country, seen more rural, I mean, you can... draw some lines between like rural life and city life. And I think that's just a function of city life. Like the cities have a greater kind of interdependence and, you know, people's actions are more of consequence on others. You know, if you, I was in New York City in December and it's like, man, if I did the wrong thing right now on this road, I could create a chain reaction that could affect thousands of people. And, you know, so that's just like the cost of living that way. And as far as like, you know, having to think more collectivistically. So there is a distinction to make there, but it's become, I think, less useful to draw those distinctions along political lines of certainly left and right, as we are more and more encouraged to tribalize in all areas of our life, to otherize. It's just not helpful. So like actually showing people what a prosperous and free life looks like, kind of stripped of political presumptions, I think is a very mm-hmm. useful thing to do. And you've done a really good job, I think, of kind of separating your brand from, you know, an echo chamber of say like anarchist or voluntarist or libertarian thought. So mm-hmm. I admire that very much about what you've done. Joe, the topic for today, like big picture, was intentional communities. And that's how the Panzia is going to come into this. But can you guys talk a little bit about what you've done in Michigan and what you're trying to do in Michigan as it relates to that?
So really, in terms of an intentional community, we're really just at the point of, in fact, this year at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, going to announce our long-term goal of establishing an intentional community as part of the network with what Shane's doing over there. What we really found was, number one, we love being around people who don't think we're utterly insane for every opinion that we speak, but also who, again, don't want to hurt us or take our stuff. And really just that feeling where you can be around those people. And when we come together at our event, it's it's such a recharge of the batteries, that feeling of real live actual freedom that we do not have in our daily lives. And let's face it, 2020 was kind of a quick gut shot of, oh, wow, all of this can really go to shit in a big hurry if somebody yanks the chain, you know, supply chain disruptions, everything else. Being around other people who know how to build things, fix things, and survive and provide for themselves and help with others has tremendous value. And so really, we kind of decided that, hey, you know, this fest kind of comes, and when it goes and it's over, everyone has this sort of downtime, this blues feeling, and you know, it's the post-fest depression. Well, what if we could live with those people? And what if we could kind of keep that thing going, and we could cooperate with each other, and we could have that as our lives? And well, look, here's Shane. He actually does it, right? Mm-hmm. He's making it happen. And I think it's really cool. So our plan is to announce that as our long-term goal of the event. That's what we're going to raise funds for. That's what we're moving toward.
So I should just enter this into, I mean, everybody listening knows this, but I think it fits into the conversation. I was in part of a, I would say in many ways, a type of intentional community in New Hampshire for a long time. I think because its mission was set up with a political purpose in mind, it welcomed a kind of division along people pursuing different goals, right? So there were people who became involved in New Hampshire's Free State Project to bring about political change. There were the Leave Me Aloners, the people who just wanted to kind of go off the grid. There was like a more social community in the center of the state. And then there was a civil disobedience-based community in the western part of the state. And then, you know, towards the seacoast, groups of entrepreneurs, unschoolers, a lot of people who are in my audience kind of congregated there. But so like what was going on in Keene, the civil disobedience, was at odds with what was going on in Concord, the state capital politically. And removing the politics from it. I mean, yes, we have political views. I'm not saying we don't, but removing that as a focus, I think, is a very, very helpful thing. At this point, there might be a lot less hope for political solutions than there was, say, 10, 12 years ago, certainly 15 years ago, when this idea of a Free State Project came to be and started being implemented. So yeah, I like what you're both saying about that. Shane, I wanted to do some terminology before we go any further. You have these mm-hmm. acronyms, PAZ and TAZ, P-A-Z and T-A-Z, and you've also mentioned mm-hmm. First and Second Realms in this piece that you sent me and elsewhere on your website. So I just mm-hmm. want to get that clarified, what all of that means as it relates to what Joe just kind of laid out.
Sure. So PAZ is permanent, is an acronym for permanent autonomous zone, and TAZ is short for temporary autonomous zone. So basically, they're places where we can have our autonomy, exercise our autonomy in a temporal sense, whether it's temporary, like a freedom festival, like a weekend, or whether it's something permanent, like a PAZNIA. As far as PAZNIA, that's where the inspiration for the name came from. PAZ is short for permanent autonomous zone, and it's also means peace in Spanish. But the first realm and the second realm. First realm is a society that does not respect self-ownership or individual liberty, but rather heralds the supremacy of government and authority. In other words, it upholds the collective as superior to the individual, and its foundation is coercion. That's the most important distinction. Only thing I need to know, have you forsworn the use of coercion? That's it. That's it. And you also have to be vetted. So that's another. I can talk more about that later on. But so that's the first realm. And the second realm, to contrast, the best definition I've found is from a crypto agorist novella that we have on the have via Liberty and Tech Publications called Hashtag Agora. The author there says, quote, technically, the second realm is described as encrypted communication, encrypted currencies, anonymous and pseudonymous identities, and untraceable action. So the more modern way I'm thinking about the second realm, or the way I'm explaining it, is most people are familiar with agorism, counter economics. Well, what we're doing with PAZNIA, what the second realm does is it expands the agora to include living a liberated culture, our own infrastructure, things like off-grid electricity, mesh networking, etc., and incorporating volume and security culture principles. So we have a PAZNIA constitution. Obviously, we're a free republic, so we naturally have to have a constitution and a declaration of independence. So
That was my next question is like, what kind of a, yes, everybody comes together on these principles, but is there some kind of accountability or binding agreement? So yeah, I'd love to hear. And Joe, I know you're thinking about that too. So if you have anything on that after Shane, please let us know. But yeah, talk a little bit more about the contract, constitution, binding agreement.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, so one of the major issues of intentional communities is dispute resolution. And I'm just thinking about this now, but we've kind of counteracted that from the start because last year I had something, what started the whole idea for Pazium, but was Vanu Fest, something I decided to put together last year. But I live out here and, you know, like, I practice Vanu and security culture principles, like using pseudonyms. We recommend people sign the constitution using a pseudonym. So the people that I invited out here for the first Vanu Fest were all people, like basically the third people that came out were people I've been going to the Midwest Peace Liberty Fest with for like 6 years. So there's with these folks, there's not a need for like a dispute resolution at this point. Like, we've kind of already gone around that to where only people that are like extremely vetted, not only for like, I'm not really talking about vetting like infiltrators, but people that you would want to live with like on a daily basis, right? That you know have forsworn the use of coercion and aren't going to fall back into, those coercive tendencies of the first realm. But as far as the Constitution, which is the founding principles of Pazania, all it is a respect for and commitment to privacy. The use of pseudonyms is encouraged. Don't hurt people and honor your contracts. So there's the voluntarism right there. A culture that encourages humanity to flourish rather than degrade and regress, and a recognition of the important task ahead of us to ensure the continuation of freedom into the future, another way for those seeking a way out. So that's it. It's like, that's the foundation is just that. There's no, so you mentioned the political thing. I mean, I've been doing the Vanu podcast for years, and I've interviewed quite a few people that from the left-leaning persuasion that are, you know, doing incredible work in the realm of lifestyle changes, much more than, and not to just to draw a distinction, not to criticize or anything, but just to kind of point it out, like when it comes to anarcho-capitalism, folks that would more be kind of more on the right, if anything, it's a lot more theory. So I appreciate, regardless of political ideology or what people's beliefs are, what's their act, what are they doing? What are they doing, and are they doing it upon, you know, the foundation of peace and voluntarism?
And Joe, I'll throw to you because you guys have been at it quite a while in Michigan, right, with Midwest Peace and Liberty. And I'm not just talking about the fest, but you have a fairly tight-knit community, even if it is not super tight-knit geographically. But I remember we did that great meetup at Mike's house when I was traveling across the country in 2017. And I was so impressed with the number of people who showed up. And even though almost everybody was in Michigan, some had come from like quite a distance. So you've put together a collection of, you know, personalities, and everybody comes together around a philosophy, which is good and obviously is, you know, not a promise of elimination of conflict, as we've certainly seen. I saw that in New Hampshire. You've seen that in Michigan. But it certainly moves the ball much further along than you would get in, I don't want to say multicultural, because I don't think that matters, even though different cultures might bring different expectations and needs, but certainly a multi-expectational society, a politically divisive society, and a poorly educated society or miseducated society where there's no priority put on any kind of self-sufficiency, right? There's adults to run to when things go wrong. That is something that we're schooled in the most formative years in our lives. Now we see an extension of that into higher education, right? Like I was in college 20 years ago. Most of the time, the shit we were doing, the last thing we wanted to see was an adult, you know, outside of the classroom. And now it seems like it's just common practice in college culture to run to adults, to blame adults, to seek help from adults in all social matters in that increasingly toxic environment. So given that, as that's all first realm, in this like second realm that we've at least started to experiment with in our various ways, how has that looked going forward for you in building an intentional community, reflecting on the lessons of having had this network of people, this community for, I would say, at least it's been like a decade at this point?
It's going on a decade for me. I think 2012 is when I sort of let go of the reins and went full voluntarism. And that was when I met some of these people straight away, I'll say, obviously, no, you don't get rid of conflict. In fact, I have conflicts with a whole bunch of them all of the time. Many of them make choices with which I very much disagree. They do things that I don't approve of or don't like. And really, though, you know, the beautiful thing about it is we're still friends. We still speak. We discuss matters. We have debates. We negotiate. We compromise. You can never get rid of conflict, but we use it as a method of both self-improvement and exercise in allowing freedom for others. And when coercion is off the table, when it's not part of the potential quote-unquote solutions, you really find ways to accept and understand and listen. One of our people is in fact, you would probably love to talk to her, Katie Testa. She is an NVC instructor, nonviolent communication, great communication facilitator. We have empathy circles. Sorting out our differences becomes really, really easy when we know how to actually listen to one another. And it's also extremely easy to share with that same crowd when you know that they're not going to hurt you because they disagree. That, I think, is a big part of that. You know, dispute adjudication gets pretty easy, not to mention that, you know, you don't actually have to be best friends and interact with them. We are fine with, you know, person A and person B may not necessarily care for the things that the other does. They leave each other alone and everybody's fine with that. I mean, in the entire time we've done this, we've never actually had any physical altercation. We've, you know, nobody steals anything and nobody gets hurt. That's the real beauty. I mean, it's something that we don't see in our regular world where everything is just cause for freaking out and wanting to harm or steal.
Mm. So you have had some conflicts that had to be resolved where obviously a thoughtful individual who might not have the best problem solving skills for a particular situation is often still going to understand that I'm not going to try and belong somewhere where I'm no longer welcome or I'm no longer getting my needs met. But there's a more pressing question here, and I want to throw back to Shane for this one. The Vanu podcast, intermission number 50 that you sent me from last August, it was titled Liberated mm-hmm. Areas Among the Tyrannical Wasteland. That is a fabulous title. Yeah, the tyrannical wasteland, and just kind of going back to that first realm and the prioritization of collectivism over individualism, what we've learned since last August is that really has no end in sight. That really has no end in sight. And a lot of my content lately has been looking at this with thoughtful guests and saying, you know, where do you think this is going? And as far as that first realm is concerned, none of us have exciting predictions, right? Maybe exciting, not hopeful. Right. And that's kind of a long road ahead of mainstream society in that way. So the idea of a liberated area, as we see an encroachment of authoritarians escalating at a rate that I have never witnessed in my lifetime, how does one establish a liberated area? At this point, like we could go back, like you know, you talked about the origins of this in the 1960s. And I think, yeah, maybe given the context of the time and people could only see that far, there were things happening in the United States in the 1960s. There were a group of at least young men who were being, you know, taken into the custody of the government, given forced inoculations, sent to Southeast Asia, forced to kill people. That was in the age of television, like when that all happened before in the 40s, it was a very carefully managed thing. But seeing stuff like that on television, obviously the civil rights movement, a large interest in the population, not feeling like their dignity as individual human beings was being honored, and it certainly wasn't. So yeah, in the late 1960s, the world was, there were these kind of ominous signs that the United States was going in a very, very bad direction. And I'm only listing a couple of examples. Today, there has been a significant intensification over that. And while in the 60s, people could have broken off and started a commune. There was actually, just to throw this in there, a really beautiful movement across a belt of the Northeast into the Midwest in the mid 19th century, which is how you get all of these intentional communities, and some of them often become these kind of weird utopian societies. But even the Walden idea is a part of that movement. So what was possible in the middle of the 1800s and what was possible even in the 1960s, as far as like communes or breakaway societies, by the 1990s, if a group of people wanted to get together and just kind of live on their own and do their own thing, they had a good chance of being firebombed by that point. And that's not to like let the Branch Davidians off the hook, like they did nothing wrong, but they certainly didn't deserve that fate. So that was certainly kind of a turning point in an astute American, certainly one who valued independence, got the message by the 1990s. You know, Ruby Ridge was another example of this, where it's like, hey, you are our property. You are government property. You're not going to go off on your own and do your own thing. The 1990s, Waco, Ruby Ridge, those were the good old days, it seems, compared to now. And I hope I'm not being too cynical. So that's a long lead in to the question of like, how could you possibly establish a liberated area in this degree of tyrannical wasteland?
It's a great question. And if it was down to, one spot and the world where we all congregated, that would be problematic, central point of failure, to speak in technological terms. To bring in another technological term related to I guess Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, decentralization. The idea here is a network of these things, where if one goes down, it's irrelevant to the whole. That these things are, all over and so pervasive that, if there's bad security culture practices at one, they face the ramifications, they face the coercion, and hopefully it doesn't, seep into, the larger network. But it's certainly, I've been, I guess I'll say politically aware, just for lack of a better word off the top of my head, since I was like 18 or 19. And I was blown away by how quick things progressed last year, which is one motivation for putting this entire thing together. So there's also just that, where there's risk to it, but there's also risk to doing the things you have to do to be a part of that society, right? So it's kind of to a point now, like, do something or not. And the way that I see it, I was running through it this morning as a thought experiment too. I mean, we've got so many people all over the world. Like, I've got people who follow Paznia from Europe, these Berlin cypherpunks. So like, we've got these places all over the world. We've got these allies everywhere. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility at all to put together a not for the general public, but for people who are part of the Second Realm network, the Paznia network, who have been vetted. They have access to this map, to this directory of places where they can go, and where they never have to interact with the First Realm. They don't need to go to the grocery store for food. They don't need to go to Babylon Pharmaceuticals for their health needs, because here at Veritas Paznia, we've got Rife healing devices or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's like we're talking about building alternatives to every single human institution, and obviously these things are important, whether it's food, health, energy, all of these things. So it's intentional community, of course, but it's a lot bigger than that. So that we're trying to build this overarching network, and not only just build it to survive and to thrive, but to eventually, hopefully, replace the First Realm. People see how efficacious it is, and I don't know. I mean, I couldn't foresee this getting to this point. So I'm not holding back possibilities. Personally.
That's amazing. So it's very interesting, because so you're approaching like 30 years old, we'll say. You've been at this for 10, 12 years. You and I have talked that one of your introductory points was Bill Cooper. So you're certainly primed.
Which has become relevant again.
Yeah, it became relevant.
Full circle again. Yeah, I didn't think that, but yeah, go ahead.
So yeah, and even you were surprised. Well, I opened the conversation by saying like, man, Shane was on to this a while ago, but I certainly reflect on last year thinking like how ill-prepared emotionally I was for what happened in a lot of ways. And kind of missed a lot of important cues that I should have looked at for skepticism, at least in the first 6 to 8 weeks of what happened. So I just think that's really interesting that even Shane was surprised. I want to throw this question to both of you guys. I had John Bush Austin Guy on my show a few months back, and we talked about the freedom cell concept. And if, you know, I want to hear what you both think about it, but Shane, you can go first on this. Are there distinctions between this and that? The freedom cell idea seems like it's more just current, continuing to exist, maybe with a kind of security system in place, but existing in the first realm with a security system in place is the freedom cell idea. While you're talking about taking it one step further, which the current situation, meaning the last 18 months, seems to, for many people, necessitate at this point. Is that fair?
Yeah, yeah. So the way that I explain the distinction between freedom cells and PASNIA is so freedom cells, I think there's a magic number of people that works
it's
best.
Flexible.
I think it's like seven people or something along those lines, where there's a set number, 7 to 10 people. We're talking, you know, single or double digits. And it's a really tight knit group of people. And the way that I understand it, they're for whatever the people that are in that particular freedom cell want to do. So if all they want to do is get together and talk about, you know, survivalism, or they want to do shooting, or they want to get together and talk about Bitcoin, whatever it is, it's a lot more, it's kind of open-ended in that way, but it can be more than that too. I've heard Derek Rose and John Bush both talk about, you can do kind of the same freedom cell network type thing, which there is a network online. I guess the only real distinction I guess that I would make is that PASNIA might be, PASNIA Intentional Communities, the second realm network, might be a little more overarching. But PASNIA has got a page on the Freedom Cell directory. I think we need, you know, all these tools and resources, and another great way of organizing.
Joe, any influence on what you're doing there based on that idea?
Well, I actually wanted to circle back to your previous question about talking about the risks. I mean, you a few years back, you drove across this country, right? Mm-hmm. Well, and you may have noticed there's a lot of places where it's really, really far in between everything else. There are places where people live in communities and or even on their own, and they don't have to see or interact with anybody else. Even here in Michigan, you know, I live in the Metro Detroit area, but you go up to the northern part, and even throughout all of 2020 and, you know, lockdowns, masks, and all that stuff, there were plenty of places where life pretty much plodded along as normal, and you know, things are a little more isolated from this first realm. Now, granted, they're certainly not perfect, but it's a big place. There's a lot of space. And not to mention that I also live in a place where there's a whole lot of fresh water that's super easy to get a hold of. So I think that's always one of the big crucial things. No matter where you go, you got to have water, right?
Yeah. 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 I mean, this is something that I actually think about a lot, right? Like the real physical America versus the America that I view through my computer screen or a television screen if I choose. So you're absolutely right. It's a really good point, Joe. And I've said this like a dozen times in 2021 on this podcast, at least. But I spent a lot of time in the first 6 months of this year commuting regularly between Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a city, and Butler, Pennsylvania. A small, maybe it gets the designation of a city, but it is certainly an entirely different kind of rural lifestyle. And I joked recently on the show that even through their own ignorance, if it's just, you know, ignorance, the people in places like Butler have a very good chance of being the kind of saviors of America, right? Just because it's like, whatever you guys are talking about, we're not doing, we don't trust you. But the problem with that is they would all fall in line immediately behind the right charismatic man, as we saw over the last 4 years. And it's not like these people don't value, you know, freedom. It's not like they can't come together around a community. I remember growing up in New Hampshire in a politically diversifying area because it was in southern New Hampshire. People, you know, there were refugees from Massachusetts who couldn't live with the politics and the tax situation that they created there anymore. But they brought their political beliefs to, you know, the so-called live free or die state. And even though those divisions existed, it was like community was more important. So that's a kind of that has a bonding effect. But there are, I think, and I've seen a lot of them in my travels, just even over the last 6 months around the western part of the state of Pennsylvania. There are a lot of people who are not going to do what they're told. I hope they're not going to do anything too drastic, because that's just a useful dialectic. But they are going to be points of friction in the expanding tyranny, I would say. Now, how are they dealt with? I don't know. Do the perception management mechanisms exist to vilify them for not falling in line? Of course they do. But that's like TV and internet world versus, or Twitter world versus the actual physical real world. And it's interesting to think about. I guess the question is, I don't know how far along some of the things that Shane is promoting actually are, and people might not even realize it. Not in the form that, you know, the whole Vanu philosophy is imagining it, right? Because these people are obviously using Google. They're obviously watching Fox News. They obviously, you know, have Bank of America accounts, all these things. They're plugged in, right? But there's a spirit still undefined in a lot of these people, in a lot of these places, who are just like, are you insane? You think we would go for these things that you're talking about? You're going to come knock on our doors. You're going to force us to do this. You're going to force us to do that. They're rooted in a way of life, tradition, community, and they're certainly going to be disobedient if somebody comes to interrupt it. So I don't know. I mean, that's just like food for thought, Joe. You brought that up, talking about, you know, some of the things that I observed in my travels. Shane, if you want to weigh in on that, and then Joe, if you have any follow-ups, please.
Perception management is really, really strong. So I've been looking into it's been a major driver the past few years to reverse my so-called type 1 diabetes. So I've been very, very, very much focused on health. This was just kind of, interesting timing. I was already starting down, you know, research path. The virus versus Turing theory, as you have talked about in your podcast, Brett. Perception management, if you think about how prevalent and pervasive cancer is in the U.S., and then you hear that, you know, just across the border in Baja, you can go get it's a 30% chance, like reversal rates of so-called cancer. But you wouldn't know about that in the States. You would think your only option is to go through, what pharma would present you with. Right. So just as with people's perception of Mexico and other places. Yeah, there are bad things that happen. But, I was there for a month and a half and I wasn't there for that long. Perception management. The media is going to propagandize and fearmonger. It's what they do best. So, mm-hmm. And again, the state coercers are out there. They've always been here. They probably will always be here. What are we going to do about it? Still where I stand.
You know, there are always risks of the, as I've heard them called, the bludgies or the enforcers, but they have their resource limitations, both in terms of numbers and in terms of funding. Quite frankly, the idea of knocking on doors across the country is utterly insane. It's completely untenable. They cannot do it. Every time they have to enforce something harsh against peaceful people, they pay a spiritual price. Other people wake up and they say, wow, that was really messed up. That's not right. They shouldn't be doing that to people. And the harder they squeeze, the more people squish out from the cracks and say, no, I'm not going to be a part of this. It has its limitations. And quite frankly, obviously it's cliche at this point, but this is late stage empire. We are seeing a collapse, a decline. Yes, they will harm and hurt and steal and do a lot of awful things before they go down, and they'll take a lot of people with them, but they can't get everybody. And the more spread out you are, and part of what Shane does and that philosophy, that invulnerability, not vulnerable to coercion, making yourself a difficult target, you know, not being the softest target, not being that person sitting in a major city center, relying on these, government controlled supply chains for all of your sustenance, for all of your survival, for all of your entertainment. That makes you a harder person to control. And for many cases, they say, man, it's just not worth it to go after all these people. I don't think we can do it. Make it difficult.
Yeah. So I had a really great conversation with Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, maybe like 5 years ago. And I think the title of the episode, mm-hmm. there's a video of it on my YouTube too, just a little highlight, but it was called Creating a Market Demand for Liberty. And you know, what Ben put out there is he's like, right now, because of a kind of philosophic corruption, there is a huge market demand for coercion, and coercion solves every problem. So I'm kind of trying to figure out, as I look forward at the next 2, 4, 5 years, what
responsibility should I feel given my skills and my platform, or the good faith that I've built with a fairly large number of people? What responsibility should I feel, as long as it doesn't translate into like a self-sacrificial practice, to expand that market demand for the things that we're talking about? You know, I think these are, I really, really, really admire what's being done in practice. And my only question about it is, what sort of preemptive defense should we think about in terms of, yes, the resources of the people who will actually come and, you know, use the guns against you and throw you in the cage, they're limited. But there has been a tremendously effective campaign with technocracy, obviously becoming a larger and larger part of it over the last two decades. Not that that wasn't a design that existed before that, to basically turn more people into a kind of horizontal police force, right? Which we've seen really, really escalate in a very effective way over the last year and a half, because what other options are there? This is life and death, you know, and people have to be responsible and people have to be watchful. And I'm like really broken up by how many stories I hear about families fracturing and people being told they can't see family members. And, you know, I mean, we had a trial run of this with the previous president, where it's like, if you voted for this person, I don't want to see you or talk to you or be friends with you or be in a relationship with you or have you at Sunday dinner. Everything that happened since March of last year has only contributed to that kind of division, even now, like basically breaking families apart. So people who do understand a kind of peaceful practice of communication, people who are clear thinkers, people who feel like they are not participating with friends or family to win arguments or seek their approval, but feel like they have something to actually contribute to other people. I'm kind of wondering, like, what is the sense of responsibility I should feel to not, at this point, produce counter narratives? I think counter narratives are kind of a lost cause, right? Because people are given these heuristics or these shortcuts or these caricatures of, you know, you say something that's off the mainstream media script and they go, oh, you're like Tucker Carlson or Alex Jones, or you're an anti-vaxxer, or you're a conspiracy theorist. And there's a two-word way to dismiss you. So instead of that, like inspiring thought, inspiring curiosity, as you're right, Joe, that metaphor of the squeezing hand. More and more people are going to be like, geez, it's tight in here. That was one of my hopes right from the beginning with this thing. Last spring, I was saying, or you know, spring 2020, I was saying that, like, people are going to feel the grip. And what are they going to do? And I might not be able to say, hey, I've been telling you about this all along. Not that I knew this was coming, but inspiring curiosity, inspiring skepticism, I think that might be the best route to continue to, like, it's a little late for seed sprinkling. But as the saying goes, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago and right now. And I kind of did both. And I'm kind of trying to think about, you know, at this point, it's still worth doing. But to both of you, do you still feel some responsibility of outreach, not just to other people that you care about? Or are there still people in your life who, you know, even need this kind of outreach? Or responsibility to yourself, or responsibility to this philosophy as a kind of defensive measure?
I'm not going to say what anyone else should feel in terms of responsibility. And I don't even know if I deem it as responsibility from my own perspective, but every other human that I encounter has some manner in which they can contribute value to my life, right? That we're a way they can make things a little better for me. Whether or not they realize that potential and capitalize on it is well, not within my control. But what I can do is I can find a way to make a connection with them. I can find a way to be a person who listens to what they have to say, which honestly, the overwhelming majority of the people I meet, if you just listen to them, they want that connection. They want to tell you their story. They want to tell you their, you know, what's in their heads. I drove an Uber and in Lyft for a while, and my God, you might as well call it a psychotherapy job. I mean, These people are just dying to share with you. They want that connection. Be a person that they like being around. Be a person that they like talking to. Be a person that will receive what they're saying. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them, and it doesn't mean you have to cave into their demands or you know, really even make yourself vulnerable to damage that they can do. But when you focus on connecting with other people and you focus on the person, a lot of those divisive, you know, those divisions, those barriers, those walls come down, and you find ways to coexist. You know, my ultra leftist triple masking neighbor, boy, she really likes me and she's a nice lady and we get along fantastically because, again, I focus on that connection. I find ways to enjoy time together. That's kind of my thing. Let people like you.
That's it. In that, making all of this look appealing and empowering, which relates to what Shane is doing and promoting, that's kind of what I was driving at. So Shane, we'll finish up with you on that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I've always thought was most efficacious, I've never tried to reach like an audience at large. I've always been kind of like a, for good or for worse. For the first few years of my time in alternative media, I was pretty divisive towards political crusaders and things. But you know, really it's inspiring through action. And what I'm trying to do here, you know, Veritas Paznia. So the free country is Paznia, and then we've got cities. So Veritas Paznia is here. You know, like I want this to be a demonstration of what one of these second realm knows, what another Paznia could look like. And really, I think what has been most influential for me over the past year and a half is realizing how much of my reality was wholly constructed. And not actually like wholly constructed, like the bookends of reality, what's actually real. Again, like I bring to mind, you know, inspiring through action, like when the first realm, inevitably fails people, you know, in the pharmaceutical realm, like the second realm can step up and, you know, be that alternative. I think that's really the best method of outreach. But, obviously, like I still do, the Vani podcast, I still do LUA publications about books on Amazon. I still do outreach and outreach as I can. You know, I think about just over the past year and a half, or a couple of years, not the first, you know, 5 or 6 years of, you know, diving down rabbit holes. There's so much context, so much reading, so much information necessary, like to get where I've gotten, that for someone to, like someone has to be incredibly dedicated. Like they have to have that soul level dedication to, you know, pursue these things. Like it's right, not just yeah. something they can pick up and throw away. So, I think the people that need the information will find it. I think like all the stuff on Bonnie's out there, every episode of LUA is out there still. We ensure, you know, through library and through IPFS and through all these things, that these resources are always available and people will find them. The people that need to find them will find them. And I think that's the best we can really do, because unfortunately a lot of the Serval Society is just completely programmed. So there's not much that we can do for a lot of folks. But I think that's what we can do on a positive.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think my question is partially informed by, like, as far as this face to face or one to one, boy, there is the potential for it to get more difficult for us to virtually communicate with large groups of people. Right. There is a real emerging obstacle course there. Obviously, people more prominent than us have been dealing with that and aware of that for some time. So then there is that kind of looming question, is my day coming, you know, and, you know, whether that applies to SSP or the next thing that I do. It's possible. And the question's kind of driven by like a desire to be continually purposeful. In this form of communication and outreach is obviously very important to me, which is why I've chosen to do what I've done for the last 12 years. So, you know, those are my thoughts. And that's definitely a conversation that we'll continue on my show. Now, I know today there was a lot that we didn't get to. So I'm going to point people to Shane's work. I think it's possible we could do a follow-up in person, if you guys would like, at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest in 3 weeks. I am bringing recording equipment and I am planning to get, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 podcasts done while I'm there. So I would be happy to reconvene with you guys then. Before we're out of here, could you just give your websites one more time?
So yeah, Midwest Peace and Liberty Festival. It's mplfest.org. And again, you can register up until August 5th. Then the price goes up when you'll be paying at the gate. And yeah, I am definitely down to talk to you again on the grounds.
Awesome. And Shane,
the Free Republic of Pasnia, pasnia.com. So obviously, as I said, people who come out here have already been vetted for like 5 or 6 years, but you don't have to be that vetted for 5 or 6 years. You just have to be vetted. So if you do want to come out to Vonnie Fest 2 here at Pasnia, which is September 27th, October 4th, come out to the MPL Fest first, and then I can vet you there. I can meet and get you the invite, all that good stuff. So yeah, pasnia.com, it's for Vonnie Fest. And then if you want to become a stakeholder, STEAK, it's my little membership cooperative thing I've come up with. But if you want to become a stakeholder, there's the honorary, which is more of the digital unvetted. If you want to support and get some cool things, we have, you know, again, we're the Free Republic. It's naturally, we have passports. They look legit. You can see pictures of them. We've got, you know, Pasnia IDs, Pasnia flags. And now for this year's stakeholder, we've got Pasnia beach towels for those who are really, really into that sort of thing. So yeah, I will be updating. Pasnia.com does have some of that information there from last year. It will be updated in the next couple few weeks. But yeah, that's Pasnia. Would love to have more individuals, more individuals out here, and then also more nodes in the network. So if you've got property you'd like to start expanding outwards, we'd certainly love to have you as part of the network. And again, security culture minded. All those sorts of things. We live here. Like, we don't need trouble from coercers, public or private. So yeah. And then the other thing, but I haven't done an episode in a little while, but VonniePodcast.com is the place to go for all paths and the updates go out there in audio format. So that's another place to connect.
Excellent. So here's the follow-up. This would be the setup for the follow-up conversation. I want to talk about how a buffer is created. Like, we talked about this a little bit, like, a liberated area in a tyrannical wasteland, but the practical means of buffering between the two, I think, is a really interesting thing to dig into in more detail. So that can be the plan. I will see you guys there. Thank you for taking the time today, Shane. It was great to have you back. Joe, it was great to put you front and center for the first time on the podcast. And I look forward to more. I look forward to seeing you guys.
Hey, same here, Brett. Thanks a lot for having me back on. And yeah, look forward to seeing you next month and hopefully at Vonnie Fest here in a couple months too. We'll see.
We're going to have a good time. I'm looking forward to it. And thanks for having me on, Brett.
All right, I'll cut it there, guys. That was great. We got through about half of what I wanted to get through. But I wouldn't change a thing. And especially if we can do a follow-up. So I'll let you guys run. Sure. And definitely look forward to seeing you both next month. Joe will be in touch in the meantime. Stop by any Sunday, if you want to give updates to my people. Please remember, everybody, that is the University, our private social media retirement community that I mentioned right there at the end of the show. There is a link in the show notes to join on a monthly basis, or you can get the phenomenal and increasingly relevant Ideas into Action Summit at SSP University. Just spell that, university.com/ideas into action. Use the coupon code MySpace if you want to pay all at once and get the Ideas into Action Summit, or join monthly, try it out for a few months, participate in our great clubs, Discord, Sunday discussion groups. If you're curious, thoughtful, and have, I'd say, above average social skills, I'd love to see you there. Thanks for listening, and take care. You can be-